Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 200. I'm recording it on Saturday, January 9th, 2010. The PE10 level today is 20. That's high for those considering investing in stocks. Not good news for those considering investing in stocks. The music for the podcast is by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetent.com. The title of the selection is Surf Inspector. The title of the podcast is Why Conservatives Should Oppose Continued Promotion of Buy and Hold Investing. The PassionSaving.com site recommends the rejection of the buy and hold approach to stock investing. And I argue for a transition to a new strategy called valuation informed indexing. And valuation informed indexing was developed as a result of discussions that were held on the internet beginning in May 13th, 2002 and going right through the current day. So for almost 8 years, these discussions have been going on at discussion boards and blogs. And I think it would be fair to describe the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate as the most controversial and the most exciting series of investing discussions ever held on the internet. We have learned amazing things about how stock investing works in the real world. But we've also, and that's of course wonderful, we've shown the power of this new communications medium to help people learn. At the same time, there's been a very dark side. I call the dark side the campaign of terror. And there have been people, a small group, but an intense group, very, very intense group. And these tend to be people who either have calculators developed under the buy and hold model or books or studies, this sort of thing. And they are doomed and determined to block these discussions, to block middle-class investors from learning what they need to learn to invest effectively. And this group has been successful in getting honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and other valuation-related investment topics banned pretty much throughout the internet. There's a ban in place at Morningstar.com. There's a ban in place at Bogleheads.org. There's a ban in place at IndexUniverse.com. There's a ban in place at Early Retirement Forum. There's a ban in place at Motley Fool. There's a ban in place at the Oblivious Investor blog. There's a ban in place at Free Money Finance blog. There's a ban in place at Behavior Gap blog. There's been abusive posting at many other blogs, which obviously intimidates people who want to ask questions and who want to share their own thoughts. These people are intimidated when these ruthlessly abusive posters show up and, you know, threaten to kill family members. You know, they put up entire websites aimed at ridiculing people who have posted honestly. If you have a business on the internet, they make it their life project to destroy that business. You know, they'll reveal personal information about you on the internet if they find out you've ever posted in favor of allowing honest posting. So we have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful situation where we've learned things about investing that no one's ever known before. And that would allow us all to retire years earlier, and that would get us out of this economic crisis and just, you know, be a win-win-win-win-win-win-win for every single person involved. And then we have this very dark side. And I'm the leader of all this. I'm the one who put forward the post that kicked off the great debate. I put that post forward at the Motley Fool discussion board at May 13th, 2002. And you can read all the background at the website. There's about 100 articles on investing at PassionSaving.com. This is the 200th podcast. They're all, at least, almost all of them are at least an hour long. They discuss all different aspects of the question, everything you could think of. There are four unique calculators at the website that don't exist anywhere else on the internet and provide very powerful insights to investors. I developed those with John Walter Russell. There's John's entire site. John Walter Russell is my partner, and he has an entire website of research into these questions. His website is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. So lots and lots of information. I have an article. If you go to the valuation informed indexing section of my site, I have an article there on why the reckless promotion of buy and hold investing for 30 years after the historical data, after the academic research showed that there's zero chance of it ever working in the real world, was the primary cause of the economic crisis. I have an article pointing to 20 studies showing that buy and hold can never work. I have an article providing links to 20 articles that have been published in the mainstream news media where leading figures will point out how we have known for years, many, many years now, that buy and hold is pure gibberish. Warren Buffett has said the conventional investing advice is quote-unquote nutty. Rob Arnott, who was editor of the Financial Analyst Journal, the most prestigious journal in the field, has said that today's conventional investing wisdom, that's buy and hold, is comprised primarily of, quote, myth and urban legend. Myth and urban legend. Rob Arnott once was speaking at a conference where 200 academic researchers were in attendance, and he asked for a show of hands on how many believed in the efficient market theory, which is the intellectual framework for buy and hold. And I forget the exact details. I wrote about this at the blog, but I think it was, you know, a small number of hands, you know, a smattering of hands went up, two or three. And he said, well, okay, how many are going to use the efficient market theory in the research you do when you get back to the office Monday morning? And nearly every hand in the room went up. So the situation we are in January 2010 is virtually no serious person believes in buy and hold today. It's gibberish. It's been shown to be gibberish. Yet, no one dares to acknowledge that the king is wearing no clothes. If you're in this field, you can make millions of dollars promoting buy and hold. And if you tell people that buy and hold doesn't work, if you report what the research has been saying for three decades now, you will be shunned. You will. It's a career limiting move, or possibly a career ending move. You may be out on the street. There are about 10% of the experts who will acknowledge the realities. People like Rob Arnott and Cliff S. Ness, obviously John Walter Russell, Ed Easterling, Andrew Smithers, John Malden, obviously Robert Shiller. So there are Jeremy Grantham. So there are people out there who will tell the straight story, but most middle-class investors never find out about this. I had a glimmer of it back in May 13, 2002. I certainly didn't know the full story because of the attacks on my discussion board community. I had built the Motley Fool board up into the number one discussion, most successful discussion board in the history of the Motley Fool site as of that time. And I had these people that were now attacking the board, trying to destroy it. And so I had to do research. I had to find out what the story was. And, you know, I just sort of tapped into all this. And it's all reported on at my website. So the problem we've run into is the honest posting has been banned at pretty much everywhere. I mean, there are places where you can speak honestly, but even there, you'll be, what these goons do is they enter your name into a Google search engine. So if they find you posting honestly, they then, you know, go there and attack. They have websites where they organize these smear campaigns. So they're preventing middle-class investors from learning what they need to learn in order to invest effectively. And that's, it's making the economic crisis worse. Because what we need to do is to reassure people that our markets can work. And if we explained what we did wrong, obviously, you know, and explain what would work, that would reassure people. But we can't do that. Our hands are tied. The stock selling industry is not going to do it. The stock selling industry has made hundreds of millions of dollars promoting buy and hold. I don't believe this was done intentionally. There's really no evidence it was done intentionally that I know of. Really none. You're tempted to think that. When you see what's going on, you're tempted to think, you know, these people got together in a room and they just did this. But I don't personally see any evidence of that. What happened is there were academics who were studying investing, and they were turning investing, it had always been a subjective thing, people just gave their opinions. They were turning investing into a science, into something objective, and they were basing it on research. And I think this is wonderful. I think this is the most important development in personal finance in our time. It was a hugely positive step. Eugene Fama is the big name. Burton Malkiel is the name of the guy who wrote the book that popularized these ideas, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. And John Bogles, of course, the founder of Vanguard Funds, who took it, you know, to a practical level where he founded a fund group where people could use his index funds, use the Vanguard index funds to follow all these scientific, academic research supported ideas. So all that is wonderful, but as you know, we should not be surprised, as happens, you know, in human affairs, the people who took the first cut at this objective approach to investing, they made a mistake. All humans make mistakes. They made a mistake. The mistake is called the efficient market theory. The efficient market theory says that the market always gets the price right. Therefore, this is where all the conventional wisdom of today in investing comes from this. The idea was, they acknowledge, of course, that individuals can get it wrong. But what they say is if one person gets it wrong, someone else is going to jump in to, quote unquote, exploit that mistake to make money from it. So in an overall basis, the market always gets the price right. This is why you're told that it would be foolish to try to beat the market. This is why you're told that you cannot time the market. This is why you're told not to pay attention to the price of stocks. If the market is always setting the price properly, the price is always more or less right. They don't say it's precisely right, but they say it's as close to right as you could get. In other words, you can't do a better job. You could study stocks for a million years, and you're not going to do better than the market as a whole. This is the efficient market theory. And if that's true, everything the buy and holders say is correct. If that's true. The efficient market theory is the intellectual grounding for all these ideas. And it all does follow. It all logically follows. The people who promote buy and hold are smart people. They're good people. They're hardworking people. And they're trying to help. Or at least they certainly were trying to help. I'm not so sure today, but they certainly were. And I think to a large extent, they still want to help. I'm sure of that. I'm sure they want to help. But they're compromised today, I think, by the money. But if the efficient market theory is true, then it all follows. But this is a data-based approach. So when you're asking, you know, is the market efficient, you have to look at the data. And we have data going back to 1870, 140 years, and the entire historical record says that the efficient market theory is not true, at least not as they put it forward. So they got it wrong. They made a mistake. And the mistake, unfortunately, it's one of these things where the road goes in two directions. And if you go down the efficient market theory road, you end up with buy and hold, which turns out when you go down the right road, what you find out is that buy and hold is the worst strategy imaginable. It's the opposite of what you should do. The key to long-term success is to always time the market. Now, I have to be careful when I say that. When I say always time the market, some people are going to think I mean, oh, you should jump in and out of stocks because you think, stocks are going to go up over the next 6 months or stocks are going to go down, all this sort of thing. No. These academics showed that short-term timing, jumping in and out of stocks because of your guess as to what's going to happen, does not work. And I'm persuaded, I think the evidence is strong, it does not work. Short-term timing does not work. That was a huge breakthrough, and we all should be grateful to these people for doing that. The mistake was when they proved that short-term timing doesn't work, they got so excited that they went ahead and jumped to a hasty conclusion that no form of timing works. And that is totally false according to every sliver of data available to us. If you try to test long-term timing is you change your stock allocation because of changes in the price of stocks, dramatic changes usually. Small changes don't matter. But if there's a dramatic change in price, you should be changing your stock allocation. And if you do that, that always works. There's never been a time in history when it didn't work. It gives you higher returns with lower risk, dramatically higher returns with dramatically lower risk. This is the fountain of youth. This is all good, no bad. And it shouldn't be surprising. What would you think would happen? Don't we consider price in everything we buy? We consider the price of comic books and bananas and sweaters. Well, why wouldn't the price of stocks matter? It turns out it does. When stocks are low priced, the long-term value proposition is just amazing. Knock your socks off amazing. When stocks are fairly priced, the long-term value proposition is very strong. When stocks are insanely high priced, as they were from 1996 through 2008, stocks offer a horrible long-term value proposition. If you invest heavily in stocks at those prices, you're almost certain to delay your retirement by many years. Likely, you may destroy yourself. You may destroy the entire economy. This is really the political question. So, we have to get the word out on this. Now, the logical way to do it is to go to the investing people and get the word out. You know, John Bogle and Bill Bernstein and, you know, Larry Swedrow and Jonathan Clements and Scott Burns and all these. Well, I've gone to all these people. I've tried that. And they don't want this to go forward. They don't want people to know. Scott Burns is a columnist for the Dallas Morning News, great columnist. Scott told me he agrees with me. But he said, two statements, that sum it all up. He said, the mainstream media can't report this, Rob. We've known this for years. This is no surprise, but we can't report this, Rob. And this is a quote, it is information most people don't want to hear. Scott Burns said this. It is information most people don't want to hear. What Scott Burns is telling us is the people who write about stock investing, they don't see it as their job to help people invest effectively. They see it as their job to tell people to be popular. They want people to buy their magazines and buy their books and buy their calculators and buy their products. And if you want people to buy your products, you got to get them to like you. And that means when people are insanely overinvested in stocks, you don't tell them. You say, hey, keep putting money in stocks. That's great, man. You're a winner. You're not one of these loser scaredy cats that are following what the historical data says. Keep doing that, man. Keep putting that money in. But of course, the problem is if everybody is saying this, and we all are born with a get-rich-quick impulse, we of course want to hear this. If they're saying this and we want to hear it, we're going to do it. And if we do it, the economy's going to go off a cliff because we're all doing the wrong thing. At January 2000, the most likely long-term return on stocks was a negative number. So if we all put our retirement into an investment class providing a negative number, we're all going to end up busted. And this is what's happened. This is why we're having an economic crisis today. The second quote from Scott Burns in some email correspondence with me, he said, Rob, you've got some great ideas, Rob. This is good stuff. But Rob, this idea of telling middle-class investors how stock investing works, that's quote, catastrophically unproductive. Can't tell people accurate retirement planning numbers, Rob? Come on. You don't know anything about this industry. Well, I think I do. Maybe I don't know anything about the industry. But I know middle-class investors. I've spoken with thousands of them over the past 8 years. And what I've heard from middle-class investors is they want to know the realities of stock investing. Some don't. Now, Scott, he's on to something. There's a large number of people who are emotionally invested in buy and hold investing, and they don't want to know the realities. No way, no how. That's true. That's true fact. And it puts people in a tough spot. Because if you have a blog and you're trying to make it successful and you tell the realities, a lot of your readers are going to get mad at you. So, there's a real problem here. But the answer is not to hide. The answer is not to cover it up. The answer is to get this out. We've got to inform people so that people can learn the realities and they won't be upset anymore to learn the realities. And my experience with a lot of these experts is you can read between the lines of their statements and, read all the stuff at the site. Or if you have questions, please write me. There's a contact Rob button on the left side of every page at the website. So just send me an email and I'll give you details, I'll give you links, whatever. I'm happy to do it. a lot of these experts, they want this to get out. They want to give accurate information, but they feel that if they did it today, the environment is so poisoned that they'll lose their jobs. So we have to help them. So in order to help them, we have to do an end run. We can't do it, you know, we're not going to be able to do it. Even personal finance blogs don't feel comfortable reporting this stuff. And again, I can, you know, I detail that at the site. My experience is where a number of blogs have banned honest posting. Others have, you know, said, oh, I'll tolerate a little bit. But, you know, they make it clear you're not welcomed. They don't want to hear it. Or you know, if they allow comments, they don't run guest blog entries. You know, they don't follow up. They don't want people to know. Because it's, from a marketing standpoint, telling people the realities of stock investing is death in the year 2010. And I know whereof I speak. From a marketing standpoint, telling people the realities of stock investing is death. Now, how do we change that? The stock selling industry isn't going to change it. They don't want to die. Well, the collapse of the U.S. economy is a political issue, no? Yeah, I've sure seen a lot written about it in all the newspapers. Sounds like a political issue. It's affected the healthcare debate. It's affecting the elections. It affected the election in 2008. And it's going to affect the elections in 2010 and 2012. It's the biggest issue on the scene. So what we need is to get people in the political blogosphere interested in these questions. And then those people can start applying pressure to personal finance blogs to write about this stuff. And once we get to a point where there's roughly 10% of the population knows about this stuff today and 10% of the experts, we need to get it bigger. I don't know. If we get it to 20%, that would make a big difference. At some point, you know, I don't know if it's 20%, 30%, what we have to get to, at some point, it will become no longer feasible to have bans on honest posting. If there's 30% of a blog community saying, hey, I want to hear the realities, the owner's going to say, you know, I'm with the 70, but I can't fight it anymore. I'm just going to have to allow honest posting. And once you allow it, ultimately everybody signs up because it doesn't help one person alive not to know the realities of stock investing. So once we get over that hump, once we get over the resistance we're facing today, it's all over. And then even the stock selling industry will feel comfortable reporting the realities and everything's groovy. So that's the idea. Now, what I want to do, I'm going to be writing. I've made it a project for myself in the year 2010. 2009 was the year for recording podcasts, and I've recorded 200 of them now because I wanted to cover as many topics as I could so that when we have the next stock crash, people will have a place to go to where a lot of these questions are addressed, and hopefully we can start rebuilding our economic system. Now I think the thing to do is to try to get, you know, a broader awareness of these problems and the solutions, not just the problems. I want a broader awareness of the solutions, both, so that we have a positive, so we're not depressing people. So we need to go to the political blogosphere. So I'm going to be writing emails to a lot of political blogs over the course of the next year, and I thought it would be good that when you write to political blogs, you almost have to be partisan. By nature, I'm not a partisan person. I'm definitely a conservative. I was liberal for most of my life. I feel that I've been pushed out of the Democratic Party. Mainly, well, I won't go into it all why, but you know, I'll save that for another blog, but another podcast. But I don't feel comfortable in the Republican Party, mainly because I see it as a party of the rich. But I certainly feel comfortable being called a conservative. If you were going to characterize me, I would characterize me as a Palin supporter, Sarah Palin supporter. So sort of this Tea Party movement is where I feel most comfortable. You know, and there are a lot of people in the Tea Party movement that were Perot supporters, you know. They're not Democrats. They're not Republicans. They're looking for solutions, you know, practical solutions. They want to see Democrats and Republicans working together. So I don't like taking a partisan position. But when you go to blogs, I feel you have to, because almost all the successful blogs are either conservative or liberal. So my thought is I'm going to record this podcast on, you know, why conservatives should oppose continued promotion of buy and hold investing. And then the next one I'm going to do is why liberals should oppose continued promotion of buy and hold investing. And then when I write to these blogs, I'll put a little paragraph why I like the blog. I'm probably going to write mostly to blogs that I like. And then say, you know, if you want to know more, please listen to this podcast, or maybe I'll put an article up the site. Please take a look at this article. So the people that like words can read the words, and people that like to listen can listen. But I think liberals and conservatives both. This is not a partisan issue. But I feel that I have to make my case on a partisan basis, because when you're going to blogs, they tend to be partisan. So I need to get conservatives interested, but my hope is that we will get conservatives and liberals interested. I will tend to be probably more persuasive with conservatives because that's where I'm coming from. But I don't know. I have a lot of the leaders in this field are liberals. Robert Shiller is a liberal, and he's the leader. And Paul Krugman has done fantastic work. He's a columnist of the New York Times. He's a liberal. So there are liberals. There are also conservatives. One that I know, Jeremy Grantham, I know is a conservative from stuff I've read. At least he's not an Obama supporter. I'll leave it at that. But I think there are conservatives too in this, you know, interested in these issues, the evaluation issues. So I'm going to try to get political blogs interested, but I'm going to try to get both conservative and liberal blogs, probably more conservative, I'll be contacting, because that's where, you know, as I say, I feel more comfortable with this whole Tea Party movement. I think it's the issue's tailor-made for the Tea Party, because, you know, it has to do with competence, it has to do with elites versus middle-class people. The elites, the stock-selling industry has become elite. They're more worried about the money they make promoting investing ideas than they do getting the answers right. And that's elitism. That's what the Tea Party movement's supposed to. There's a real correlation here between what's going on in the political arena, where the Tea Party people feel that our elected leaders are not representing us, and what's going on in the stock selling industry, where the people advise us how to invest are not representing us. It's the same phenomenon. You know, whatever you want to call it, institutional, it's really just an they pass bills to benefit politicians. That's really what's going on. And it's the same thing in the stock selling industry. They come up with investing strategies to benefit stock advisors, financial planners, not to benefit the people that they're supposed to be helping. And that's just wrong. And that needs to change. And the society can't continue to function unless that changes. So that's where most of my energies are going to be directed. So I want to have I have two prefatory points, and then I'm going to go through a list of 10 reasons why conservatives should oppose continued promotion of buy and hold investing. The two prefatory points are, one, if you're a political blogger and you're listening to this podcast, please, you know, if I've contacted you and asked for your help and you're listening to find out what the story is, please, don't think that these issues are complicated. You know, in other words, if you're I really get the sense that a lot of people, they listen and they think, oh, it makes sense, but they say, well, these experts, you know, they must know better. You know, Rob's some guy who posts on the internet. He never went to investing school. He never managed a big fund. I'm a political blogger. I don't even do personal finance. You know, John Bogle must know better, and Scott Burns must know better, and on and on. Well, no, sorry, they don't. They're smart. You know, don't ever say that I didn't say that. They're smart, is the Dickens. But so are the politicians smart. The problem is the incentives, the financial incentives cut the wrong way. For the politicians, it's often a better deal, you know, to cut a deal with the pharmaceuticals or with the, you know, whatever, the insurance companies, than it is to help, you know, their constituents. They can always come up with some marketing campaign to pull the wool over the eyes of the constituents. But the money comes from the special interest. Same thing in the stock selling industry. The money comes from promoting buy and hold. Because everybody has a get-rich-quick impulse within them. And buy and hold is the ultimate get-rich-quick scheme. The ultimate get-rich-quick scheme. Why do I say that? Because buy and hold tells you don't have to worry about the price of stocks. You just, you know, buy stocks no matter what the price. Well, where do you think the money comes from? And in the 1990s, when we were seeing 20-30% gains, where do you think the money came from? It was being borrowed from future returns. And what the experts should have been telling us is, we've borrowed, you know, in January 2000, the top of the bubble, stocks were overvalued to the tune of $12 trillion. That meant that $12 trillion in the hands of middle-class investors was going to disappear over the coming years. Well, what do you think happens when you take $12 trillion out of people's hands? You cause an economic crisis. They can't spend. They're scared. And they don't spend, and the economy collapses. If we had told people when prices were going up to sell, to lower their allocations, then the market would be self-regulating, and we never would have had this problem. So we have to change. But the financial incentive is to do just what they've done. The financial incentive is to continue to promote buy and hold. So this is not a question where the experts are smarter. You know, they're plenty smart, but you don't have to be smart. This is common sense. All the stuff I talk about is common sense. If it wasn't, I couldn't do it. So don't worry about that at all. You absolutely can understand. The only thing that makes it hard for people to understand is they've heard the gibberish so much that they, you know, they've been impressed by it. Well, dig in a little bit. You know, look at the historical data yourself. Check some of the articles at the site. Check the links. Check what other people say. Ask me. Send emails in. Get a discussion going at your blog. And you'll get lots of smart people contributing. And you'll find out. You know, it took me 8 years to learn all this stuff. I didn't learn it in a day. One step at a time, I learned more and more and more and more and more. And what I learned is that the conventional investing advice is the opposite of what we should be doing. So this isn't a case where you're not intelligent enough, you know, to be able to invest effectively or to understand the issues properly. And second, some people I think are going to come to this and they're going to say, well, Rob, you know, you might be right, but you know what? It's just an opinion. These other people have a different opinion, and there's other people with your opinion, and so what? Everybody has an opinion. Well, no. Buy and hold is not rooted in opinion. It's a data-based approach. All of the claims, the buy and hold claim is totally counterintuitive. In every field in human life, price matters. When you buy anything you buy, price matters. This idea that stocks are a good buy regardless of price is preposterous. So how have they pulled this off? How have they persuaded millions of people to put their retirement money into an asset class without looking at price? How did they ever do that? They did that by claiming that the data supports it. That's how. They claimed that the academic research supports it. Does it? No. I've already quoted Buffett, who said it's nutty. I quoted Rob Arnott, who said it's myth and urban legend. But, you know, it should be easy to overcome this. It was a mistake. As I say, they didn't do it intentionally. It was a mistake. And many of them don't understand today. I mean, you know, please don't misunderstand. There's a lot of cognitive dissonance going on. People who have spent their lives pushing this stuff, they don't want to admit it's wrong. But they know it's a problem. The defensiveness, when you mention valuations, the defensiveness is off the charts. But they are not stating that this is an opinion. They are stating that the data supports what they are saying. Data can be checked, and I've checked, and the data doesn't support what they're saying. You may believe it, and they may believe it, but the data doesn't support it. So, am I saying that buy and hold should be banned? Discussion? No, no. What I'm saying is we should lift the ban on honest posting that applies on the internet today. Motley Fool won't allow posting on this. Morningstar will not allow it. Index Universe won't allow it. I'm saying all these places should allow it, and the 10% that know the realities will then speak up more consistently than they ever have before, and the 10% in 3 months will turn into 20%, and in another 3 months it'll be 40%, and in another 6 months it'll be 80%, and then we're off to the races. In other words, we have to allow people to hear both sides. We have to stop the smear campaigns, stop the bans on honest posting. That's the political. When I say this is a political question, I don't mean that what the historical data says is a political question. That is an investing question or an economics question. But the question that honest posting has been banned, that's a political question. The fact that the stock selling industry is trying to block people from learning the realities, that's a political question. That's a question that concerns every citizen. Because this doesn't just cause people to lose money in the market. If you go back over the history of the U.S. market, you will see, from 1900 forward, I've looked, there's been four economic crises in that time. The four have one thing in common. In all four cases, stock valuations had gone to double fair value before the economic crisis. And there's never been an economic crisis when we didn't have that happen. In other words, allowing stock valuations to go high destroys the economy. And without an economy, our system can't work. So this is very much a political question. We need to open this up. So the point of this podcast is to go through 10 reasons why conservatives should oppose continued promotion of buy and hold. All right. Number one, conservatives favor a free market. Now, this is tricky. This is tricky. Why do people like buy and hold? There's a lot of reasons. But if I had to give one reason why people like buy and hold, I think it's because people think of buy and hold as being a free market solution. What buy and hold says is, I mentioned the efficient market theory, what buy and hold says is the market gets in there and sets the price properly. And so essentially, people who follow buy and hold investing ideas, buy and hold just means you look at your risk tolerance, you decide what your stock allocation should be, and then you stick to it no matter what. So you look at, you know, maybe you look at it and you say, well, I should be, you know, person in my circumstances should be 70% stocks. You go with a 70% allocation, and then no matter what the price of stocks is, you're always stay at 70%. You rebalance so that if your allocation gets, you know, out of joint, you pull it back to 70%. And what the data says is what you should be doing is changing your allocation in response to dramatic changes in valuations with the goal of keeping your risk level roughly constant. So say that 70% really is your right allocation at times of moderate prices. Well, at times of insanely high prices, like we had from 1996 through 2008, your allocation maybe should be 20%, not 70%. Big difference. And at times of insanely low prices, like we might be seeing after the next stock crash, maybe your allocation should be 90% instead of 70%. In other words, you don't have one allocation. What you want to have is one risk level. You want your risk level to be constant. You can't keep both your risk level and your stock allocation constant. It's physically impossible. The risk of stocks changes with changes in the price of stocks. So if you want to keep your risk level constant, you need to change your price. Now, what a lot of people say is, hey, a lot of people think this is a free market approach to investing. And it is. It is in a way. It gets us halfway there. The way I'd say it is, the wonderful thing about buy and hold is that the people who came up with it, they do have a respect for the free market. FAMA, I believe FAMA is a University of Chicago guy. You know, this is Adam Smith economics. This is classical economics, libertarian economics. That's the thought, you know, process that I think he's coming from, and a lot of these others. So on the surface, it's true. This is a free market approach. The problem is, what makes the free market work? What makes the free market work? You know, if you're a conservative and you love the free market, you have to think about, why do I love the free market? You don't just love the words free and market. There's something you love about the free market. What you love about it is the free market allocates resources well. Command economies always screw up. They're often well-intentioned. You know, some bureaucrat says, yeah, I'm going to decide what people need, and that's what they're going to get. But they can't do it. There's millions of people. People have different wants, different desires, and no command economies never work. The free market works because it rewards those who address genuine needs and punishes those who fail to do so. The free market works. But you've got to ask yourself, why does it work? An essential component of a functioning free market is information. People have to be able to find out what the good products are and what the bad products are so that they can choose properly. And when they choose properly, that's how we reward the good producers and punish the bad producers. That's how the whole system works. Well, what's going on with buy and hold investing? I mentioned the ban on honest posting. People don't have access to information today. Robert Shiller talked about this. He said in an interview, he said, I've never told exactly what I believe about stocks. Why? If I did, it would be considered unprofessional. The suggestion was he'd be driven out of the field. This is a tenured professor at Yale. But he can't say what he believes. Well, if he can't say what he believes, what do you think people are doing on the internet? They're not saying what they believe. I've run into lots of people who agree with me, and they send me emails, and they say, Rob, I agree with you, but, you know, I keep quiet about this. I don't speak up. You should do the same. No, we need to speak up. Why? Because if we don't speak up, there's no free market. Only if people hear both sides of the story can they make an intelligent, informed decision as to what stock allocation to go with. The stock return predictor is a calculator at my website, and it tells people the most likely 10-year return on their stock investment from all the various starting point valuation levels. Very, very powerful tool. If everyone had the stock return predictor, or some variation of it, you know, I don't think there should only be one of these calculators. There should be thousands of them. Every personal finance website should have a stock return predictor. Say that every investor looked at that. The market would then be self-regulating. What would happen is, what the stock return predictor shows you is, using the historical data, using a regression analysis of the historical data, it shows you every time valuations go up, every time stocks become more expensive, the long-term value proposition of stocks goes down. Every time valuations go down, the long-term value proposition goes up. So say that everyone knew this. Say that everyone had this tool. Then what would happen is the fair value of stocks, the PE10 level for fair value is 14. Well, if we went from 14 to 20, 20 is where it gets a little bit dangerous. If we went from 14 to 20, people would sell their stocks. They would lower their allocation, and the problem solved. When they sell their stocks, the valuation level would go back down to 14, and everything would be groovy. There's no problem. That's the free market. That's the free market. That's the opposite of buy and hold. That's valuation-informed indexing. That's the strategy I encourage. But what Bogle and the other promoters of buy and hold encourage, it's the opposite. They say, close your eyes, put your head in the sand, don't look at valuations. Stay with the same stock allocation no matter what. That's not a free market. That's a cartoon version of the free market. That's the opposite of the free market. That's a command economy. That's John Bogle and the others in the stock selling industry telling us what's good for us and saying we don't have a right to the information. So if you go to Morningstar, you can't find out what the stock return predictor says because it's banned. And if you go to Motley Fool, you can't find out what the stock return predictor says because it's banned. And if you go to Index Universe, you can't find out what the stock return predictor says because it's banned. That ain't no free market, friends and neighbors, fellow bloggers. It's not a free market. If you love a free market, you would favor a lifting of the ban on honest posting on the flaws of buy and hold investing. Let the market decide. Let people find out the realities and let them make their choice. And if they choose buy and hold, God bless them. That's their right. They earned the money. It's their right. But it's wrong that the stock selling industry won't let people know this. It's wrong. It's wrong for bloggers to ban this at their blogs. It's wrong for big personal finance sites to ban this, says Rob Bennett. I'm a journalist by trade. And, the first point was, you know, free speech gets me worked up. Everybody has a right to their own choices. Nobody has a right to tell me what I can hear and what I can't hear on an issue that's going to affect my retirement money. So it does. It gets me angry. I put that post I put to Motley Fool, May 13th, 2002, showed that the numbers we use to plan our retirements are wrong. They're not even close. And this has been confirmed by numerous big-name experts. William Bernstein, quoted in the Wall Street Journal all the time, he said, anyone using one of these old-school retirement studies to plan a retirement would be well advised to, quote, forget about it. Larry Swedrow, written many books, financial planner. He said, these studies are garbage in, garbage out. But who knows about this? Why isn't this written up on the front page of the New York Times? The retirement studies, the stock selling industry has been pushing on us for 30 years. Get all the numbers wrong. Where's the story? That's a political story. We're being raped. I don't think that's an overstatement. We're being raped. Now they don't talk about these old school studies so much. They sort of hush it up. But the answer is not to hush it up. The answer is to acknowledge the mistake, fix the mistake, and learn from the mistake. And you can't learn from the mistake as long as you're hushing it up. So point number one, conservatives should oppose continued promotion of buy and hold investing because we favor a free market. Second reason, because we favor free speech. Well, I mixed in those two. You know, I've discussed that. But we should all favor free speech. And, I said it. I don't want to get all worked up again. Third point. Conservatives will be blamed for the destruction of this economy if this goes on. You saw what happened with the bankers. Liberals are coming in and saying, we need to control the banking industry. Are they wrong? Well, I lean conservative. I think they're wrong. But do I have some sympathy for why people would be drawn to that message? I sure do. The bankers were no worse than anybody else. They were just doing the same thing all the rest of us doing. They were misallocating risk, misassessing risk, because they don't have the facts in front of them. Because of the ban on honest posting, which doesn't apply only on the internet. It applies, as I said. Shiller deals with it. You can't talk about this stuff in the academic community. Can't talk about it anywhere. Because it's embarrassing to the people who promote stocks and make million-dollar salaries promoting gibberish. So, the bankers misassessed risk just like everybody else did. But they're going to be the fall guys because they're rich. Is that what conservatives want? When the economy crashes again, and it's, I'd say the odds are 75%. We're going to see another huge crash, bigger than the last one, unless we get the word out about how stock investing really works and, help people regain confidence in our economic and political institutions. When it crashes again, there are going to be people saying, it's these rich people who did this to us. And, I have some popular sympathies, and I have to say, I can see their point. I don't think it's a good road to go down. I don't think the government should be controlling everything. But we have to acknowledge that we have dropped the ball. We caused this. We didn't speak up. Conservatives didn't speak up when Robert Shiller published his research in 1981 showing that valuations affect long-term returns, and the stock selling industry continued to promote buy and hold for 30 years. We kept our mouths shut. So who's to blame? People are gonna hold someone responsible for this, and it's going to result in a lot of policies the conservatives aren't gonna like. The point here from a political standpoint is it's a strategic point. When you've got people on your team that are messing up. This is true in a business. It's true in a political campaign. You need to disassociate yourself from them. And that's what we need to do. With kindness, what we really need to do is try to flip it. Get the stock selling industry on the right side. And they can regain the public's confidence. But allowing another crash to come is not in the interest of conservatives, in a political sense or in any other sense, really. Not in a financial sense either. Point four. The best political strategy for conservatives is to align with the middle class. As I said, I used to be registered Democrat for many years. When I moved to Virginia, I did not register as a Democrat. I believe I just registered independent because I didn't feel comfortable registering Republican, but I feel comfortable voting for Sarah Palin or, you know, anyone sort of aligned with the Tea Party movement, I don't feel comfortable. I voted for McCain because Palin was on the ticket, but I would not have voted for McCain if Palin had not been on the ticket. I just don't think I could have voted. I voted Libertarian in 1980. I voted for George Bush in 84, but I had not intended to. And the day of the election, my wife said, you know, we have these two boys and you're setting a bad example if you don't vote. So I did, but with great reluctance. The future of the Republican, well, I don't even want to say the words Republican Party. The future of conservatives is aligning themselves with middle class interests. The Democrats, to a large extent, they were the party of the middle class, which is why I was a Democrat for many years. They have abandoned the middle class in many respects, I think, and many others think. And this is what the Tea Party movement's all about. People are moving from the Democratic side to the conservatives who are fed up with the Republican Party are moving to the Tea Party movement. Independents who are fed up with both parties are moving to the Tea Party movement. And Democrats who are fed up with the extreme positions taken by some of their leaders are moving to the Tea Party movement. These are middle-class people trying to make a better life for themselves and their families. This is the future of conservatism. Well, how could we do a better job? And another thing about the Tea Party movement is it's a practical movement. It's not ideological. The idea is get things done. You know, don't tell us what schools you went to and how smart you are and how much money you make. Get things done. That's what this is about. We tell people, all the work's done. The historical data, the academic research, the calculators, the podcast, it's all done. Not just my site, John's site. There's 100 websites, you know, that explore different aspects of this that we can take advantage of. Notice we can create, a grassroots movement to take power back from the stock selling industry. It's our retirements. It's our retirements at risk. Middle class people. The conservative movement should be aligning themselves with middle class people and not only on politically contentious issues. This is not politically contentious. This is a win. Everybody benefits from knowing the realities of stock investing. So we should be aligning ourselves with it, with middle-class people. This is the future of conservatism. Point five, conservatives favor small business. Well, one of the things that happens with buy and hold is, you see, the reason why I say it's not free market, it's a twisted, sick version of free market. What it does is, the purpose of a free market is to allocate resources properly. What happens with buy and hold is resources are allocated improperly. So, for example, as I mentioned, $12 trillion. At the top of the bubble, stocks were valued at $12 trillion more than their fair value. That means that everybody who owned stocks, say you had $300,000 in your portfolio. The value of that portfolio was $100,000. And $200,000 was just cotton candy nothingness. Well, say that it's been your dream to start a business, and say you only need $200,000 at this whatever age you are. According to your retirement planning, you need $200,000. Well, you're $100,000 behind in real value. You know you need to save more. You can't be thinking of starting a business. It's not prudent. It just doesn't make sense. But if you look at that buy and hold number, the fantasy number on your portfolio, it says, hey, I got $300,000. I'm $100,000 over. I can shoot $100,000 into a chance. Now, what happens when the $200,000 is taken away? Your small business goes down the tubes and your years of effort go down the tubes. Is this supporting small business? If we are going to start small businesses, we need to know the true value of our stock portfolios. And we're never going to know them as long as buy and hold remains the dominant model. You see, buy and hold can't tolerate other viewpoints because buy and hold is a database model. And if the data says the opposite of buy and hold. So if you start giving accurate numbers, buy and holders freak out. I know whereof I speak. And if you're trying to start a business, you need to have accurate numbers. But you can't have them under the buy and hold model. So businesses are failing today, and a lot more are going to fail in days to come. Conservatives should oppose that. Point six, Conservatives favor traditional values. Now, there's a point I make. I have, you know, certain catchphrases, and I'll often say, the reckless promotion of buy and hold for 30 years after the academic research showed it has precisely zero chance of working in the real world has caused millions of failed retirements, millions of failed businesses, and millions of failed marriages. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, Rob, well, the first one sounds like investment talk, failed retirements, and maybe the second one, failed businesses. I don't know. It's a little off course, but maybe. Failed marriages? Rob, you're talking about investing. That's a personal finance topic. Everybody acknowledges these studies got the numbers wrong. Nobody disputes this. But not one of the studies has been corrected in 8 years. So what's going to happen? We're going to say, God bless them. Liberals are right on this issue. They're going to say, we have to help those people. I think they're right. Are conservatives going to say no? What are we going to say? We're going to say, well, you should have figured it out on your own. Well, it's true in a theoretical sense. Everybody should take care of their own money. But look, I've had hundreds of people write emails to me and say, Rob, you're the first person that ever made sense on investing. You know, thanks for having the courage to stand up to these people. How many people are going to stand up to what I stood up to? I've had these people trying to destroy my business for 8 years and succeeding. Because they stop people, they threaten people from if people are willing to give me links, they threaten them with threats of physical violence. And the John Bogles of the world, and the Bill Bernsteins of the world, and the Larry Swedros of the world sit on their hands and do nothing. And then you're going to say these people have to, you know, they have to suffer because they have failed retirements, when the only reason they don't have the information is because we did nothing when there were threats of physical violence made against those who were trying to tell the straight story. And we're going to say, you know, the whole idea that people should be able to take care of themselves is based on the idea that they can get accurate information. You can't get it today. So if we're going to say that people have to take responsibility for themselves, then we have to open the internet up to honest posting. We have to. Or we lose that argument. We lose that argument. Point number eight. Conservatives favor wealth generation. This would be the biggest thing we could do. People always say to me, Rob, they say, Rob, you know, what you're saying makes sense, but look, it's sort of depressing. You know, millions of failed retirements, millions of failed marriages, Rob, you know, I don't want to hear this. No, 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 no. This is good news. Why is it good news? What it tells us is, our economy's been the wonder of the world for the past 30 years. But you know what? It was the wonder of the world with a ball and chain around its leg. What if we cut off the ball and chain? What if we cut off buy and hold investing? What if we allowed honest posting on the realities of stock investing? This economy would do things you couldn't believe. I can't go into it all in one podcast. I have discussed it on earlier ones. What we're talking about here is allocation of economic resources. We have been misallocating resources during the buy and hold era. If we bring that era to an end, we can start allocating resources properly. And that means growth. And that's good. That's, you know, what's this phrase? A rising tide lifts all boats. This is what I'm saying. If we continue to let the retirements fail, we're giving political power, you know, to the bad guys. Not that they're bad, but you know what I mean. Giving the power to the people that are going to go with fear, and they're going to go with, you know, the solutions that don't work. A rising tide, economic growth, that's how we move things forward in a positive way. That's what valuation-informed indexing permits. That's what we want. Point nine. Conservatives favor innovation. I think this is the beauty of conservatism. And conservatism isn't just about saying no to things. It opens up all kinds of wonderful new possibilities. That's the exciting thing. You know, this is what Reagan brought to the table, and I think this is what Palin brings to the table. This is what conservatism works when it puts on a positive front. And the positive front is the innovation that comes through when humans are able to create, to use their God-given abilities. you know, to the greatest value for themselves. They get rewards, but also for society. You know, conservatism is not selfish. It's sometimes portrayed that way by its critics. But the reality is, when you make a thriving business, you're helping all the workers in that business and all the people who buy the products and the services. So conservatism is a generous philosophy, a loving, life-affirming philosophy. Well, what we're talking about here is, there's a phrase, and it drives me crazy. There's a phrase that the buy and holders have. They say, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Now, the origin of that phrase was, it was just skepticism, which is healthy. You know, if something sounds like a free lunch, if something sounds too good to be true, you got to be skeptical. But the buy and holders have taken this to an obscene, sick level. You point out a way to improve investing, and all they will say is, there's no such thing as a free lunch. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Like robots. Which means we can never advance as a people. We can never learn better ways. They made a mistake, and that's the end of that. Can never admit it. None of us can ever do anything. I'm not about that. I believe, you know, God gave me a brain to use it. And the idea is to find, you know, I quoted this saying in a recent podcast. I've heard it attributed to Robert Kennedy. It's some people look at what is, and they say, why? Some people look at what is not, or what could be, and say, why not? You know, that ain't the buy and hold attitude. Buy and hold attitude is, this is the way we've done it. Can't admit a mistake. If we admit the mistake, you know, there's 200 podcasts talking about all the benefits of opening this up to discussion. I have no fears that the valuation-informed indexers are going to win the argument. Now, if there's somebody out there that's confident in buy and hold, fine. You know, let's discuss. I can respect that. But I can't respect smear campaigns. I can't respect bans on honest posting. I can't respect that. No. No. That's weak. That's cowardly. That's defensive. That's negative. I want to take this positive. We open up the possibility of innovation when we acknowledge that buy and hold might be wrong. That's all we have to do. Just acknowledge it might be wrong, and that opens the door to all this wonderful stuff. The price of admission to all this wonderful stuff is saying, you know what? Maybe there is such a thing as a free lunch. Bogle discovered indexing. That was a free lunch. That gave middle-class investors opportunities they never had before. That was a free lunch. All knowledge is a free lunch. All knowledge is a free lunch. Life itself is a free lunch. I didn't pay a ticket. Did you? Life is a free lunch. And I want to see more free lunches in the investing area. And we're not going to get free lunches so long as the buy and holders dominate every conversation and won't permit anyone else the chance to speak. So let's open up some innovation in this field. See what happens. Point 10, my last point, the new journalism. Conservatives favor the new journalism, internet. You know, a lot of conservatives complain. The mainstream media won't tell their story. Reporters are biased. Well, I think there's some truth to those complaints. But a lot of conservatives, it's better to focus on the positive, and a lot of conservatives focus on the positive. They say, hey, the internet's opening up all new sorts of possibilities. Well, guess what? We've done some amazing work in the Retire Early and Indexing Discussion Board communities over the past 8 years. Amazing work. And it wasn't just done by Rob Bennett. It wasn't done by one guy sitting in a room thinking grand thoughts. The whole point of the May 13th, 2002 post was to invite my fellow community members to work with me to develop these new ideas. That was the point. And hundreds of them did so. John Walter Russell was retired. John died recently. Makes me very sad. I miss him every day. But John spent 7.5 years of his life, 50 hours a week on this, was never paid a penny. Go to his website and look at the letters to the editor section, and you'll see middle-class investors thanking him for having done this. This couldn't have been done. I couldn't have connected with John Walter Russell in the days before the internet. He lives in Florida. I live in Virginia. I've connected with people all over the globe. I've sent questions to John Bogle and Bill Bernstein and Larry Swedrow and Scott Burns and on and on and on. Bill Schulthess and Michael Kitsis and Bill Bangin. Jonathan Clements. This new journalism matters. And the new journalism is what gave us, valuation-informed indexing, rational investing, the whole thing. All of these, some of these ideas, may not stand up to scrutiny. If they don't stand up, Well, then shoot them down. By all means, that's the right thing to do. But we are not bound in the blogosphere. We should not be bound by what the stock selling industry dictates. We should be able to think for ourselves. Now, this goes on in the political blogosphere. I see it all the time. People do original work. But in the personal finance blogosphere, there are people who view it as a mortal sin. Who are you to question these grand poobahs? What I am, I'm the guy. I'm a guy who posts on the internet. That's what I am. Is that enough? Is that good enough? If I'm wrong, show me where I'm wrong. And I'll put your post at the next issue of my blog. Be at the front. But if I'm right, let's work together to inform the grand poobahs where they got on the wrong track. And don't tell me you feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for the millions of people who are suffering financial devastation because of the mistakes these people made. I feel sorry for them that they made mistakes, but I don't feel sorry for them for covering them up. That was a wrong turn. That's a wrong turn. We're seeing the benefits of the blogosphere, the new journalism. Let's celebrate it. I hope that political bloggers will appreciate that message more than I feel a lot of personal finance bloggers have in my dealings with them. I've been writing at the personal finance blogs for about a year now. Most of this work was done in the Retire Early community, indexing discussion board community. And the same pattern is applied over and over again. We have lots of supporters. Lots of people are excited. But it's certainly not a majority. Certainly not a majority. And maybe 20% of the community that supports us and 80% against us. But there's the ones that are against us, are not a problem so long as they're not abusive. But there's a group, I don't know, it's probably 20%, that is just viciously abusive. And the biggest problem we've had is that the site owners won't take action against them. They threaten to kill people. This is all documented. And the site owners, I write to them and I say, can you take action? And they say, oh, it would be ideal. This is what Motley Fool told me. It would be ideal if they would permit honest posting. Well, it would be ideal, wouldn't it? Would be ideal if they would permit honest posting on the numbers that we use to plan our retirements at Retire Early boards. That would be ideal. I concur. Well, that's my pitch to conservative bloggers. Please, I don't know. All this seems clear to me, but of course I've studied it for 8 years. Lived it and breathed it and slept it and ate it and, ran with it and sang songs about it. If it's not as clear to a newcomer, if I'm hitting you with too much, please, write me an email. We'll talk it over. Look at the materials at the site. Now, there's a wealth of materials. You can't read them all. But, just sample them. But, if you sample them, I can't believe that you're not going to see that there's something there. And be skeptical, by all means. Write a blog and say, Rob makes some points, but I don't know. Maybe he's a crazy man. I don't know. Go ahead and say that. I don't care. You're not going to hurt my feelings. There ain't nothing you can say, dear political blogger, that'll top what the goons have said about me. You ain't no way, no how you're going to top them. So don't worry about that. Point out what you see as good and point out what you see as bad. That's all just fine. The point is, get a discussion going. Ask questions. You know, say, Rob is saying there was death threats. Were there really death threats? You know, like, Rob, can you document that? Show me the links, my man. And I'll show you the links. And then write a blog entry about it saying, you know what? This Rob dude, he might be a nutcase, but Morningstar is wrong. Motley Fool is wrong. That's what we need to hear. Because this is a community. We've got to decide what's going to happen to our community. The United States is a community. And we have to have different voices saying different things. And the stock selling industry has dominated the discussion for too long, and they are financially compromised. It's a political issue, not an economic issue. Being financially compromised is a political issue. So we need people, if political bloggers aren't in favor of free speech, who is? We need people saying, wait a minute here. We need to hear both sides. If there's something to this, we got to get to the bottom of it. That's what I ask of you. I think this is the biggest story in personal finance in my lifetime, and I think it's one of the biggest stories of any type in my lifetime. I think it's probably not quite up there with Watergate and the Vietnam War and landing on the moon and Clinton's impeachment, but I don't think it's too far behind those. I think it's in that neighborhood because we're talking about millions of people who are, you know, have to put aside for their retirement. They have no choice. And as I said earlier, they're being raped. They are losing their life savings because they are putting their trust in quote-unquote experts who are well-intentioned but who are wrong. And who can be demonstrated to be wrong by looking at numbers. And who won't acknowledge it and who are not even willing to discuss it. Forget about acknowledging it. Just discuss it. So, that's my take. Let me know if you have questions. Go to that Contact Rob button and send them along. And I'll do anything I can to help. Good luck with your investing strategies. Good luck with your political blog if you're a political blogger.